Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming. I recognize that half of the audience, it's not my turf, but nevertheless, I'll try to convey what I think is helpful for soul health. I'd like to acknowledge first my colleagues that contributed to this, and these are also my harshest critics. When I first realized I was going to have a half an hour talk, I thought, yeah, 80 slides, and then they came and they just slashed it. But I still managed to sneak some in, so anyway. And that has been the battle for this talk, because soul health is a big topic, and it's big, it's attractive, and it has some potentials. So when I first started, I thought it was going to be about carbon landscape. Not that the carbon is not important, it's almost like it's the butter that ties the structure and the fabric for the soil, so it's very crucial. But then I looked into the talk, and as I developed it further and further, I just realized that it was not just about carbon. I was going into other directions, so I decided to sneak in the subtitle, Soil Health and Healthy Soil Landscapes. And when you are the presenter, you have the advantage to do it. So I would like to first go through the definitions, sort of we set the language and see what we're talking about. And then explain a bit the context, why context matters in every discussion, not just soil health, but any other topic that we venture. And I'll look into the scientific part of it, and I'll use the soil carbon as an example. So after all, I'll talk about soil carbon too. And then I'll look into the historical context, in other words, where the soil survey is going and it's coming from, and where soil health is coming from and it's going to. And they can converge at some point, and that's the whole sort of the theme of the talk, which comes down to the next one, which is how can we integrate these approaches, and then how can we link them together and finally come up with some solutions in the field, because in the end it comes down to us minions or technicians, you call it whatever, going out and collecting samples, analyzing them, and making sense out of them. So without further ado, here are the definitions. And you look to the one on the left, and that's the soil health definition based on the web soil survey. And I work for NRCS, so I thought I'll stick with the official definition. And I love it. It's beautiful, but it's very general. And when you look into it, you have to think, okay, how do I quantify this definition? You go to the one to the right, not that one is not general, but it's a bit more specific, and it has some things there like soils, natural resources, or soil formation classification, soil systems, and management. And they both have one thing in common, it's management. They seem to be different, but they still aim at one thing, it's management. Either natural systems or somewhat systems that have been influenced by people. Now, when you go into sort of the working definition now, further down, you can see that soil health has one focus, and it's mostly related to the cropping systems. And you saw two previous talks were mostly at the field level, and what are the management practices and how we can have a compromise between what we intend to do and how that can affect the environmental aspects of it. So you go to the right, and you see the soil science definition, and again, we use our sort of paradigms and our system, which are landscape and hill slope positions, while the soil health most of the time focuses on the field. But that doesn't mean that these two concepts are very different. They can be merged together, and I'll try to show you through some examples that they can and they should. So here's a soil carbon example, and for those of you who are from Midwest or who flew over it, you always manage to see this sort of a pattern when you fly over. And you have to wonder what that is. And, of course, we can quickly point out that this is carbon. It's darker, so it has carbon, and it's true. But then you have to ask the question, what is it? Where is it coming from? And why still this pattern persists for so long, although we have been so keen in modifying the systems, like we saw in the previous talk, by short-circuiting the hydrological cycles, by tile drainage or whatever we have been doing on those still are persistent. Well, It's because of this boundary here, which is the boundary of the latest glaciation, 15, 20,000 years ago. And after that, for almost 15, 20,000 years before we showed up, this pattern has been persistent in the landscape. So we came, we managed to drain them, to tide drain them, but yet, even after 150 years of management, those patterns still persist. And it's within the same field. You can see the boundaries and you'll see sooner in an enlarged version of it. So we recognize that this distribution of carbon really carries two things. It's a post-glaciation memories and also the post-settlement influence. They are both going hand in hand. And here is the total carbon that came as a result of this study that we conducted. And you have two signatures, two things going on at the same time. You have the spatial, the temporal change, going from Oakrick, Mollick, and Hystek, and I'll explain what they are. Hystek is a, we call it a soil that has a lot of organic matter, and some of it is not highly decomposed. Mollick is a similar soil, but it has a thinner organic, and it's a bit more decomposed. And Oakrick is a pedon that was a soil that has even thinner organic matter layer. And so you can see how the shift has occurred. The numbers have gone up from Oakricks, from Hystek to Mollick to mostly dominated by Oakrick. It wasn't, it didn't used to be like this probably before we settled in, but now we have shifted that. And you can see that due to that, you still have a lot of changes in terms of the carbon. This number has increased, but so it has, so the carbon has decreased on the other hand. Now you look into the spatial change, they coincide a bit with this, but you can see that there is a lot more in depressions, which coincide most of the time with Hystek and Mollick, compared to side slopes and summits. So you have two things going on at the same time at this field level. And that has some implication if you're going to monitor soil health, because these operate at different scales. And you can look into the evolution of the CO2. This is an incubation experiment from the same landscape that I showed you earlier. And you can see that under ideal conditions, there is a rapid decrease of carbon. Now, if it was going to be a steady one, maybe we can control it. It's almost like it's a controlled descent. But when it comes this way, when you see these things, then you know, ecologists will tell you right away that these systems are very delicate and dynamic, because they tend to go either up very quickly or go down very quickly, and so under ideal conditions, again. But the potential is there, and if we continue on this path, by the time the concentrations get here, these are not probably going to be able to sustain what we expect from the systems, higher crop yields. So here is a closer look at the distribution of the total organic carbon, the evolved carbon, which will come later, and then the wetness index. And for those of you who are not familiar with wetness index, it's just an index of runoff, surface runoff. It shows the tendency of the water to go from higher areas to lower areas and accumulate. And you can see here's the sort of the transect going from higher positions to lower positions. You can see the carbon, and again, look at the exponential increase in carbon. It goes from an order of magnitude as you transition into this area. And you can see the wetness index going hand in hand with the increasing carbon. And the reason sort of I show this one here is because there was a theme, recurring theme in both previous presentations about the tide drainage. And I think what we're dealing here with is water. And we as a soil scientist have recognized and known that for quite some time. You follow the water, and a hydrologist too. So I happen to be a hydrologist too, by the way. And we know if you want to understand a system, follow the water. It will tell you a lot of things. So what we noticed, however, was that the ratio between what was mineralized and the total carbon was flipped. It was higher in the summits as opposed to the depressions. So what does that mean? I don't have all the answers, but it's clear that the carbon in the summit, it's been mineralized much faster, and it's less stable. You'd think the opposite, but probably it's not. At least that's the data. That's what data is showing. And that has some implication, because this is happening within the same field. You can see the boundaries of the field. So how do you manage that? And the reason I point that out is because there is one thing that unifies this pattern that we see in the field. This is a typical landscape that you'd see in Midwest. You see dense till, which acts as a perching, similar to the frangipani. It perches water, and that's why you have all those tide drains all over the Midwest, because this is very close to the surface, and so they have to remove it quickly. But in doing so, they have changed fundamentally the water table and the dynamics between the water table and soil moisture and the nutrients and the organic matter, for that matter. And what it comes down to, again, it's the water. It's the unifying factor that we have used for a long time in our mapping of soils and predicting them. So here's another example. It's similar to what was shown earlier, that the movement of nutrients, now these are profiles, and this BK symbolizes carbonates present in the system, and they can affect a lot of things. The available water capacity could be affected by them. If you have a lot of carbonates, sometimes you don't get all the water. It's almost like drinking salt water. So what happens here is that during various seasons, within the same field, you have different patterns of water flow and fluctuations of water table, and within that, you have fluctuations of nutrients. And you are still managing that within a growing season. So there are things that are happening here as far as the balance, and it's a simple water balance. What's coming down and what's going up and what's being transpired by plants. And if we understand this at this scale, we can understand a lot about how to manage them, hopefully. The point I'm trying to make is that the context matters. We have to understand that in order to be more practical and come up with some innovative solutions as to how to sample and describe and quantify any soil health parameters and then address them. I mean, those that are, you know, avid exercises like I am, you go to any gym, you always see these charts. They tell you what the heart rate should be, because you don't want to go over your limits, and you could collapse. So the context matters. That's the point. I'm just like in human health, and I put this one here because in the same way that context matters for human health, it matters also for soil health. It's no different. Now, in our approach as a soil science, we have been using this models to predict and map our soils. And in order for me to demonstrate to you why context matters, I'll show some examples along these factors of soil forming factors. They are very important, but they all act at different scales. And that's important to recognize, and hopefully it will become very clear in the next few slides. So here's an example. This is one of my favorite stops. It's mile 80 in I-80 in Iowa. And there are two stops, one on the westbound, one on the eastbound. The one on the eastbound is shown in this circle, and it has a series of statues, a monolith of some soils there. And I'm a soil scientist, so I took interest and took pictures of them. But then on the other side, it's another stop on the westbound, and it has a huge wind blade right here. And this, if you look in the background, it's a big place for a windmill. So this is the first eastbound. And this is what's been happening over 150 years, since 1850 to 2000. A steady decrease in the thickness of organic, or that layer. And that goes back to that graph that I was showing you about histic, malic, and ochric. This is what's happening. But if you would have to focus only on this one, as the majority of the soil quality or soil health tests do, you're going to miss this trend here. So everything is happening beneath the surface, right beneath our feet, and we have to really be concerned about missing this part, because you have wind and you have decrease of organic matter. We all remember what happened in the 30s. That's why we are here. It's a dust bowl. And so these two tendencies are on a collision course, even as we speak. We're trying to slow it down, and we have done a good job, but maybe we should do more. And that's why soil health is so important, at least to view it from that perspective. But it has to hopefully go further, deeper, and add dimensions to it. And it was even previously mentioned in other talks here about the depth. How deep do we go to understand this? It was in relation to the phosphorus, but it's the same sort of the same message. And why the context matters. Now, here is another good example of this soil here, and you can see it's a very nice soil in the forest, and it looks nice until you look at the background and where it's sitting. And of course, it's very dramatic. I mean, I know, and it's, you know, but the message, I hope it's clear, that context matters. And these are factors that have occurred, the climate, organisms, and time. And of course, I'll add ourselves, and I call, you know, sometimes out of respect for what we do, anthropods, you know, including myself. But it's this one here, organisms, and it's us that has caused this. It was just one reel, one channel that started this whole thing. So here's a question I ask for you. Which soil is healthier? Don't be biased. It's not a trick question. Is the one here or here? I don't want that answer. I know that's what I give my daughter, and she bites back me on that. But I would go for this, right? Darker soil, better, right? Yeah, of course. But not until you know this. Look where one is standing, and look where the other one. I'm not saying this is not healthy, but it's healthy for some other purposes other than agriculture. Maybe it has reached a good status quo for the system, but it's not healthier if we want to look at it from the cultivation viewpoint. So, pick. Now, here's an example how this how they mix together in practical terms. I was asked to make a map of these 250 sites in Switzerland, and of course, I was very excited about it. And here are the a simple analysis of variance, looking at the available forms of phosphorus. This is the ammonium acetate, the CO2, and water, and look into the sources of variability. And you can see from p-values that land use and geology are almost important at the same level. If not, the geology sometimes is more important. So even though we have been managing this field for so long, and Switzerland is an old country, not like us in 150, 250 years, right? This is, you know, talking about centuries here. The geology is still persistent. So here's another example, again, how the organisms and relief affect. You have the catena, or the blocks, which are the different soils, and you have, on this other one, the nitrogen fertilizer treatments, and you have different soil parameters here. And look at the differences between this. They are almost as equal, or if not sometimes bigger, coming due to position than to the nitrogen fertilizer treatment. Here's another example from one of the earlier work that the latest one that Diane had done, and look at this again. You can see the differences between vegetation and slow position, the differences due to vegetation and slow positions, just due to the organisms and the parent and the relief. So it's not quite just only due to the vegetation, but also you can see slow positions. Sometimes it's bigger, sometimes it's smaller, but it's there, it's present, and it cannot be ignored. So the major recurring theme so far is that what I've been trying to show you is that the landscape is important, and so is parent material and land use and the management. But it really comes down to the water, because that's where we see things happening. It's at landscape scale, that field scale. You can go, and we have this argument with modelers all the time. This is the scale that really matters. The scale, the other scales for regional purposes are great, but here's where we see things happening. And so this is where we see the water doing its in miracles. However, it's as simple as it may look, it's still far more complex than we make it to, or we want it to believe. Here's an example. You know, this is one of the dear favorite topics of soil health, organic matter, for good reason. It's very important. It's one of the key things. But it's not a straightforward relationship between the role of AWC and organic matter. Here's the difference between the surface horizons and the subsurface horizons. Naturally, we see a lot more organic carbon in the surface horizon than in the subsurface horizons. So therefore, you'd expect that with increasing organic matter, you increase the water available capacity, water holding capacity. But when you look into them, you see that they almost don't match. They don't go in the same direction. However, when you see which one goes in the same direction, it's the clay. So what does that mean? Does it mean that organic matter is not important? No. It doesn't mean that, because you need to go only to the water tension at the clod, which is the one that has not been destroyed, has maintained the structure, and you can see that they go in the same direction as the organic matter. So what we understand from this is that the relationship between AWCU and organic matter is far more complex than we make it. It's not as simple. So organic matter, being on the top surface, probably helps infiltration. And by doing that, it brings the water down to the layer where clay and silt are better suited to hold the water than the organic matter itself. That's how we see it, and I know there are soil physicists here, and they can contradict me, but that's what we believe. That's what we know in soil physics, and we have been taught about this. Soil layers matter. If you want to control moisture, you have lateral movements, and we don't understand how the water moisture can be retained here unless we understand what's going on underneath that. So the lateral movement means a lot. So again, context matters. You can see at subfield level, here's a typical position that we use in our studies, and this is pH with depth. These are depth functions, we call them, or profile. So you can look at the pH on the surface, and they're not that different. However, you look at the difference between the top and when you go down the profile, then it gets less and less and less. Why is that? It's because of the water. This area here is a discharge area. The carbonates are moving from here, coming down here. Therefore, you have a lot more carbonates here, and pH remains relatively stable. Now, how do you deal with this when you're trying to manage pH here, here, and here, and you have this in the same field? I'm not saying it's easy, but it's challenging. It's something we have to think about. This is just, you know, again, things to consider. Now, we move to another direction here. This is, you know, the context, the one that I talked about is the policy and where we are as a soil survey. This is where we're coming from. And in order to understand and better find ways to come to the middle, I want to just dedicate a few slides about where we come as a soil survey. This is what we have been doing for almost 100, 120 years, collecting data, creating maps, but at polygon. They have not been spatially explicit at the subfield level. It was not what was asked. But we, however, have recognized that that's where things are going. And so this wet soil monitoring program was really the wake-up call. We understood that this was coming, and so we needed to broaden the focus of our PEDON, and it was mentioned in the first talk too, the PEDON-centric concept. We need to move further beyond that. So, and for good reasons, this is what we were providing to the customers. They don't want this anymore. It's old news. They want this, a continuous, truly continuous soil depth. And they want this too. They want dynamic, temporal. So how do we get there? It's this concept here that we have developed. It's our natural step, the evolution that we are following, the path. And again, it comes down to this one here. There are so many, I hear in so many talks nowadays that you have so many sensors being developed all around us. You take LIDAR, you take GPR, you take MIR, VNIR, apps developed for this, so you name it. They're all there. But all of them can be and should converge into this landscape, because that's the operational scale. That's the landscape that we see things and we can impact them as well more efficiently rather than chasing big, big regional things. But that's my bias anyway. So although it seems like the soil landscape is being challenged, it's being challenged for a good reason, and we need to step up on this. And here's what we are engaged as a soil survey developing this concept of moving from this static water movement or representation of the water movement through intensive monitoring coming through the dynamic expression of the same water table. And you can see this one came through these sensors and it's the same month. And look how dynamic it is, yet here we provide just one number. And that's important because if you're going to talk about environmental health, right, you mentioned that. Well, here are the loads for each of the layers and what layer is contributing more to the stream. And once you know that and you recognize that it has huge implications for the stream loads and the water quality. So coming to the soil health now, they are going through their own transformation, and for the good reasons they are focusing on biological properties. And they have developed a myriad of properties, just like we too in the soil science. However, the issue is the scales and how all this merge together. It's one thing to say I want to measure this, but if you want to measure it, I want to know what's the difference between here and there and how this is going to change in time. And it's not easy to do, because you can see that you're talking about time. Here are the properties, how vary, and you go from dynamic soil properties, which vary really within a very small, short range, from seconds to maybe days or months even, but you go to properties that vary by millennia. Well, in the same way, you go with the space. You go from soil aggregates to biomes. So what we are talking about as a soil landscape model is it's this part. That's where we can make some sense out of it. So again, to recap what I just said, here's the current focus of soil health. It's the functional units, and it's the surface horizon, and that's what we try to give the context to the soil health. That's what we hope to see it go. So in other words, how do we get there? And here is, again, the focus of the soil health. And here is the focus of soil science. And what I'm trying to do is just trying to incorporate that. It's not the other way around. I have to say that, and I'm biased. Again, I'll say it more and more. So here's the bridge. Again, it's linking this soil health, landscape, soil health with landscapes. This is the context, and I think that's why this is matter, because it has implications for the sampling. And again, you have seen this before, but you can look into this. This is the water story happening, and you won't know this if you are on top of the field and look down and you just see grass. And we know this is happening because we have seen it and measured it. So that's where we're focusing in this landscape, but what we'd like to do is just go from here to the whole thing and tie it together, and it's not easy. It's not easy. So here's the definition, and this one captures the dilemma that we're dealing with. It's the, you know, it's this soil quality, it's this influence of humans as well, but it goes at different scales, temporal, with the dynamic, and spatial too. So here comes soil health, and we hope to build a bridge to come down and see at this from different vantages, from here, but also from here. And here's an example. You probably have heard about the NEON, and so enough with telling you that, but here it's one example that we just recently have been involved in discussing how to come up with a better solution for sampling. And here's the initial points that we got from NEON about monitoring their sites. The problem with this was that it was only in the fringes of this transition system. They were not in the core where they were supposed to be, like here, here, and here. It's okay to have these points in transitions, but you want to have also in one that are in the core, in the core of the or representative. So what we did, knowing our landscape, what we like, we just start what we believe in and think it's proven. We identified all the major points that were missing and came up with a complementary site. And we did that because we had an understanding. We had developed these models already in place that captured a lot of variability, but it put them in the right context, and we developed a better, we hope, a sampling scheme that captures not only the landscape, but also addresses their concerns. So this is the end of my sort of propaganda or talk.
I can't believe I did it.
Yeah.
Because I've been kicked out. Yes. That's a loaded question, Sam. Yeah, the question is, we often are being told that our sampling is biased, and my response is, it's a loaded one. It's look, biases are everywhere. It doesn't matter. You know, you cannot pretend that you have an objective sampling because that depends on your current understanding of the system. If I had to know what I know now, 20 years ago, I would have gone and sampled some places that I did some research in a totally different way. I had that bias back then, I still have now. So that's not going to go away. It's just, it's the way it is.